Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Mike Perez, 25 years of volunteer and career experience, a career firefighter slash EMT for Guilford Fire Department in Connecticut, who rides up as acting officer when needed, and an assistant chief with Clinton Volunteer Fire Department. Mike keeps in perspective during our conversation, from giving members realistic training, having to do more with less, being a jack of all trades, and wellness for the individual. Mike opened up on a few conversations some would not want to share, but that's what makes the fire service so great, with the ability to being able to relate and learn from one another. With that, I present Mr. Mike Perez.
So my name is Mike Perez. I joined the fire service in 1999 in Brantford, Connecticut. I've been in the fire service for 25 years now since then, starting as an explorer through the programs they had available back then. It's changed a little bit since then, but got on the job. I was a seven. I was a volunteer up till then, and then I came over to Clinton Fire as a volunteer in 2016. So I've been on the job now for 17 years. Currently assigned to the heavy rescue at work. Yeah, that's the short and sweet.
Okay. All right. So was this something you knew you wanted to do, or was it like, because like I know for me, I'm originally from New York. I got into the fire service by accident. I got into it because I needed community service hours to graduate, and it turned into what it is now. So is that the same for you, or is that something when you were a little kid you always knew you wanted to?
No, I didn't want to be a fireman. So probably, I think I was like 10 years old, my parents got divorced, and we lived in Wallingford. Parents split up, and my mom moved to Brantford. My father stayed in Wallingford. And my grandfather was kind of always the guy I went to on stuff. He got tired of me being this kid sitting around the house, and he had a buddy that was involved with Stony Creek in Brantford. And it's one of the volunteer companies there, and they had an explorer program. And he's like, hey, you want to go down to the firehouse? I'm like, for what? Well, you know, they have a program for kids, this and that, get you out of the house. I'm like, no interest. Didn't want to do it. He actually basically dragged me out of the house, brought me down there, went down on a drill night. The guys were awesome. Like, it was one of those things. I walked in, I was like, this is cool. And I guess the rest is history. And then from then on in, it was just all about it. That was kind of I had no aspirations of making a career out of it back then. You know, mm-hmm. All I wanted to do was go in the Marine Corps. That wasn't a possibility. Due to some issues, which I'll probably talk about later, but it was just, you make the best of it and you fall in love with it, I guess.
Okay. All right. I know it's probably a little bit of nerves you got going on, but whatever you're clicking, it's kind of giving feedback.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no problem.
You're good. All right. So we talked about how you got into the fire service. So you are a career firefighter for Guilford Fire Department in Connecticut. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell me a little bit about the department, the size, how many stations, personnel?
Yeah, so Guilford's cool. Guilford went career back in 2004 officially with the union and everything else. And it started off as an ambulance and a heavy rescue. Two guys on the rescue, two on the ambulance, and they built the whole firehouse. They were initially in the volunteer company houses. They were smaller, basically single bay houses. And then they got the they got the new fire headquarters. And that's kind of when our chief's kingdom started to grow. So what happened was in 2007, as it expanded, they hired four of us. We made the fifth person on shift. So they basically went from two on the rescue, two on the ambulance, to now they created this thing called a utility. Like with some places, think like utility firefighters, kind of like an ad hoc on call type firefighters. So it was a position on the floor where basically your gear went in the center of the apparatus bay. And depending on the call that came in, you either drove the truck, you drove the engine, or you drove the tanker, depending on what the call was. We had this big playbook. It was interesting every time a call came in. And then that was 07, and now we're up to 10 on shift, staffing two stations. So 07 to, when did we go to 10? I think 2018. Hold on a minute. 2018, I think, was, if I remember correctly, is when we went up to the 10 on shift. We started staffing the second station. So now we have one, I mean, we have one guy driving the ladder truck. We have two on the engine, three on the rescue, which is where the officer is, two on an ambulance, and two on an ambulance up at our north station, which they leave the ambulance for all fire calls, take an engine there. So it's a growing place. It's grown very fast in a short period of time, which has its hiccups like anywhere else. You know, kind of you grow faster and your infrastructure can keep up,
right.
You know, but it's progressive. Like, we're one of those departments where every single one of our members is a technician in all the skills. So we have, everybody's a rescue technician in regards to rope, confined space, trench. We're all FEMA structural collapse technicians. Spec Rescue came out. I think they've done it twice already. And you do the whole FEMA certification program. We have the Pro Board certification for structural collapse, you know, vehicle machinery. It's a very dynamic place to work.
Okay.
I wish the fire volume was a little more than it is, but honestly, you can't beat the amount of training that's provided to you. You know, you put in for a class, they don't tell you no. You know, it's, training's huge there, which is a very nice thing to have.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's always a good problem to have. Okay. So you said Guilford has two stations. Your station one has the heavy rescue, an ambulance, and an engine.
That place is full. Yeah, so it has an engine, a tanker, 3,500-gallon tanker, Suffolk SPH-100 tower ladder, ambulance, the rescue, second ambulance, or third, actually, that'd be the third ambulance, dive truck, collapse truck, bar, our rescue three. It's our spare rescue, which has all sorts of other miscellaneous equipment on it, Zodiacs, things like that. So the house is full.
Okay. Okay, so and how many personnel are assigned at that station?
At that station, there's eight.
Eight. Okay.
So there's eight firefighters. One of them is the captain.
Okay, and depending
there's
on the call,
firefighters, one officer.
Depending on the call, that dictates which trucks come out that station.
It used to be. It's gotten a little better, right? As we grew, it became easier to staff across the different apparatus. So right now, any fire call, we leave the ambulances in the firehouse,
okay,
with the exception of motor vehicle accidents. So if it's like a fire alarm in a hydrant district, then our ambulance crew, one's going to the truck, one's going to the engine. So you have a three-man engine, two-man truck. Non-hydrant district, one drives the tanker from the ambulance, and one goes to the truck. So you got a two-man truck, two-man engine, one drives the tanker, then the three-man rescue.
Okay.
So it's dynamic, but it works. You know,
right.
It's you know, every fire department has their own uniqueness that they have to make work based on what they have available to them. So it works very well. And it's one of those things when you try explaining it to some people, they're like, that makes no sense to me. I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me either, but it works very well. So somebody smarter than me and a lot of people came up with the plan and it works. So,
okay. All right. And then your station two has an ambulance and an engine, and that's staffed. And so the call dependent, they'll either hop on the engine or take both, you said.
So there's a tanker up there as well. That's our north station. It's a completely non-hydrant district area.
Okay.
So
okay,
they might have one hydrant. It's like right on the line of the district, if it's actually the north district or not. But, you know, they might actually have three or four now because they just expanded the main. So
okay.
Basically, you need a tanker for everything out of that district. So they'll basically split driver and driver. It gets interesting when you get a fire up there.
Okay. And so you mentioned ambulances. So I'm assuming you guys do your own transport.
We do. We do. So we have firefighter EMTs and firefighter paramedics. We have running our engines ALS, our heavy rescues ALS, our ambulances ALS, and the truck is BLS, obviously.
Okay.
But the, yeah, it's, we're starting to change some stuff up, get into the future, because I don't know how it is where you are, but it's very hard to get paramedics that want to be firemen,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to get people that just want to be firemen these days. It's an interesting conundrum.
I can say I do not know what that's like, because in where I work for, we're all EMT basics. Paramedic level is provided by the county, so they have their own paramedic division that's supplemented by the county. But I will say, if you've heard of Chief Scott Thompson with the Colony Fire Department in Texas, he did something where if all you want to do is be a paramedic and non-fire, he's done. He has a development on that, and then he also has guys that are both on the trucks. He's got a whole format. I can try to get you the information on it, but I will say it works in certain areas for sure.
Yeah, so the town right next to us, they're actually they've been doing it for a couple of years now. They basically took their department, and they get inundated with medicals. Their units are doing each unit's doing sometimes 20 calls a day, 4 hour shift. Some of those guys are doing 20 runs. Like it's over the top for them. So they had to come up with a plan, and basically what they did was they started staffing two ambulances. Started as one ambulance, and then the second ambulance as basically part-timers. So the career staff, the guys on the floor working and smoke, they didn't even have time. They couldn't even do training. Like you literally pull in the firehouse, they pull back out. So then that actually merged into, okay, now we're going to put full time just EMS only staffing on. So it's a great staffing plan. It's available online. If you look up Brantford Fire Department, they're trying to make a lot of changes to make life a little easier for the guys and better for the town too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Is it a requirement for Guilford in order to promote? Do you have to get your paramedic or
No, you don't have to be a paramedic to promote. We run time on the job, so it's time on the job, qualified to work the rest. So all of our apparatus is like you have to be qualified to work that truck, pick up overtime on it, be assigned to it, stuff like that. So if you're not qualified to work the heavy rescue, you can't promote because that's where the captain's assigned. So it's one of those things where, yeah, the only requirement promote is basically time on the job and your qualifications, but paramedic is not one of
okay. All right. And on the other side, you are an assistant chief with the Clinton Volunteer Fire Department, also in Connecticut. Can you talk about that department, its size, how many stations, personnel?
Yeah, so Clinton's an interesting place. I guess I'm that loser that literally moved to this town for the fire department. Right. So my wife works for Sikorsky, so it's a decent commute for her. And when we were looking, we lived in Guilford. We sold our house in Guilford out here, and she was like, "That's too long of a drive." But you know, a little convincing, got it to work. But I came out to this town just for the fire department.
Okay.
I one of the guys I got hired with, he's actually my captain at work. He's the we've been close since we got hired. And they catch a lot of work. Like, I want to go to as much fires as I can. And I was looking at, okay, well, why don't I can't change where I'm working right now. The amount of time I have on the job, I can't uproot my family income wise and everything else. That's not fair to them. That's just selfish. But okay, can I move somewhere where I can still get that same fix in? So I moved out here and it's proactive. We work with some outstanding firemen. Awesome departments, and we're busy. So I really can't complain. You know, I moved out here in 2016 and kind of worked my way up through the ranks here. And fortunately, the membership trusted me enough to vote me into the different positions, moving up the ranks. So I held all the positions from lieutenant up to the assistant chief spot where I am now.
Okay.
So it's we have a lot of good people here. I'm very proud to be part of this place.
Okay. And earlier in the beginning, you kind of broke up where you said the gentleman that got you on Clinton, you said he was your captain, but what's the rank? What's his rank at Clinton?
So he's the chief in Clinton.
Okay,
He is
he's
the
the
big
fire
cheese.
chief.
Yeah, so him and I—we got hired together. We actually we met during our psych test for work. They scheduled us at the same time by accident. I don't know how either one of us passed it, but we did. And then we've been on the job together for 17 years. And over the last few years, he's been my shift captain. So he's my captain at work, chief out here. But you know, more important than that, he's one of my closest friends.
And how many stations is Clinton? Is it a single piece or two stations,
Two
three?
stations,
Two
two
stations.
stations. We have our headquarters and our station two. Our station two holds right now two tankers. One's kind of an engine tanker hybrid. That just came in service last week or a week prior. And then we have an old Kenworth commercial chassis and then a Suffin engine out of that station. Then on our headquarters, we have a tower ladder, two engines, heavy rescue, deuce and a half brush truck, another brush truck, ambulances, stuff like that. So
okay. And
pretty well spread out.
Is it truly volunteer, or are you guys supplemented by part-time staff?
No, Clinton's 100% volunteer. The only thing where people make any form of income is the ambulance. They'll do duty shifts for the ambulance, but there's no true full-time staffing.
Okay, so pretty much it's you rely on your volunteers. So pretty much all your volunteers, I'm sure, carry pagers, and when the tones go off, whoever the drivers respond to the stations, get the trucks out the door. So truly a volunteer system.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Nothing wrong with that, because
it works. It works for us. You know, we have our so dedicated that we get out. You're not hearing the fail to respond like some other places. We're getting out the door. We're getting out with quality people. You know, we're not putting out 30 guys on a run. But it's like the old saying: I'd rather go down the river with 10 studs than 100 shitheads. Well, we have our 10 studs. You know, and we have a great crew here.
Okay. A couple questions, because I started as a volunteer, so I remember my roots that got me to where I am today. So just a couple questions with your department. So your pagers go off, your members go to the station. Is there a set number of individuals you want on a truck before you're allowed to leave, or does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. So we allow our responders to respond to the scene. Drivers, get the trucks to the scene. If you are closer to the firehouse than the scene, get to the firehouse, get on a rig. But it doesn't make sense for somebody, due to policy, to drive past the fire scene when you could render assistance to go to the firehouse to be the third person on the truck. It doesn't really make sense, because sometimes that initial care is what's the most important. So how it works for us, it works very well.
Okay. And you have, with Clinton, you have a fire chief, an assistant chief, and do you have a deputy and then captains or lieutenants?
So it goes chief, deputy, assistant. So I have one between myself and the chief. And then it goes, you have your two station captains. So one for headquarters, one for station two. And then you have a lieutenant for the apparatus. So we have an engine lieutenant, truck lieutenant, and a rescue lieutenant. And same thing at the station two, there's an engine lieutenant. And then we got the Marine Division on top of that, which has a captain and lieutenant. We run a fireboat out of here.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. All right. So you got a lot going on.
Yeah.
And so what was the attraction of Clinton? Call volume yearly like? Approximately.
So
it doesn't have to be exact.
I think last year we did 2,400 and change.
That's pretty good. For two stations. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's, and truly right. Volunteer.
100%.
That's moving.
Now that's not all fire calls. That's
no, I get it. Yeah, firing EMS, but still 2,400 calls. That's still moving.
Calls. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I can see the attraction there.
Right. It's good.
And so,
if you like doing calls, it's good.
Okay. And roughly, how many fires are first due? And I'm assuming you guys were mutual aid, of course. So.
Oh, yeah. So like, we're very, very big on here and starting mutual aid early. Like, we have basically, if it's dispatch as a box, you're getting a mutual aid, at least two or three mutual aid towns right off the rip. You can always turn them around.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where when you need them and you haven't called them yet, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Turn them around, and then now we go to work and fire. Now we get a whole nother. Up on that, we're getting the second RIT team, right? Second RIT team, another engine, depending on if there's hydrants or not. Are we getting the tanker task force? Things like that. So it's one of those things where it's a very well lubed machine out here that took a lot of very smart people years past putting the plan together and getting everybody to work that same plan, and it's done very well.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, because like I said, you know, in this day and age, man, it's very hard, you know, it's not, and I'm sure anyone listening will probably shake their head to this. You know, you have some departments that'll get toned out, man, and retoned because unfortunately their members have to work, which leaves the town wide open. So I know certain areas where they will dispatch the first due area, and then within a minute or two, if there's no response, they'll dispatch the next closest department to run into that town for assistance. So it's very Like, I love hearing how you guys have your community, you know, it's running smoothly.
Right. And like even on the overnights and stuff, like all fire officers, we have duty nights where you're responsible to be around and get on the call. So it's a night. So if we have 10 positions, you're on a duty night in 10 days. And the rotating schedule runs through each position from the chief all the way down to the lowest position. Nobody doesn't, everybody has the same buy-in and ownership of their night. So it
Okay.
works out very well.
Okay. And if need be, I'm assuming you probably have enough room where if your members wanted to pull a weekend shift or if a storm was coming through to staff the station, like keeping members there throughout the night
Oh, they
also.
can absolutely. Usually, like snowstorms, you know, people come down here, hang out, stay over the night. You know, we'll get some food, things like that. Keep the station maintained. You know, we run two plow trucks out of here. You know, it's just one of those things where our public works is outstanding in town. But they started doing it years ago at work, where we had a plow truck for every storm. One of our guys from the floor, he would plow ahead and plow the driveway. So whether it's the ambulance trying to get in, you know, now the driveway's clear, they could sand it. You know, worrying about the ambulance slipping and sliding. You know, even with the crews, throw sand on the walkway, so now you're kind of preventing a lot of injuries in that realm. And it makes it more accessible and a better response when you can actually get to the goal and not count on a plow truck coming from halfway across town.
Okay. All right. I'm going to jump into realistic training on a small budget. You said, or before we started this conversation, you mentioned earlier how you are in charge of training. So, what is one big thing, or what are a couple of things you do to bring that to your members? Because that's a hard thing to do in the volunteer world. You know what I mean? Like, it's always mentioned blowing hose in a parking lot. But besides that,
I don't think
what?
it's a hard thing. I think people say it's a hard thing to take the lazy route. I think you have to be creative. You know, just because you don't have a fancy piece of equipment to go train on, okay, what do we have around here that could duplicate that same scenario, right? You could have a couple 2x4s kicking around, string them up from inside of a sea container or a trailer or in the firehouse, hang wire from for entanglement prop. You know, think of the simple little, yeah, stretching hose lines across a parking lot. Not realistic. Okay, go to your town dump and see if there's a scrap piece of carpet kicking around. Lay something else, and now they're stretching over something that's not smooth like a parking lot. Just little stuff. Like, try to make it as realistic as possible. You got to make it hard. I can't tell you how many times you see training, and they're like, "Oh, just check the boxes. Let's make it the easy stuff." And that's kind of the worst thing. I don't know if you guys are an OSHA state with quarterlies, but you got to get your OSHA quarterlies in, and you get to that point, you're like, "Oh, we need a quarterly in this, quarterly in that," and it's. At the end of the day, you're missing out on good, true training because you have to check the boxes so you're compliant. You know, it's one of those, it's tightrope walking, I guess you could say. You know, you want to give the best training possible, but you have to make it hard but attainable. And I think a lot of people take the shortcut and they're afraid to make training hard. But when you make the training hard enough, I think the membership that's actually there for the right reasons appreciates it and they actually come back better. You know, because how is somebody supposed to know their breaking point if they never reached it? You know, if they hit their breaking point, okay, now they know this is what they have to push above. You know, like we had a fire one class this past weekend. We had a kid drop doing they were doing VES and he was doing the mannequin drag down the hallway. Smaller kid, you know, and he couldn't get the mannequin up onto the windowsill. Couldn't get it up on the mannequin on the windowsill. So we're trying to get him, show him some different ways to do it. And it's just he was smoked. He literally worked himself to the point where he had a panic attack and dropped. You can't be upset at that. Like, honestly, I think that kid crushed it. You know, he worked him, and that's all you can ask. Like, I don't want somebody to drop every drill. But you have somebody that literally gave you their all. Now he knows what his limit is. Now he can work to actually raising that bar and making his limit higher. You know, it helps somebody to personally identify their deficiencies and to improve on them. And if you've never reached that point, then what good are you doing yourself?
That's facts. No, I love the message behind it. I truly do. Does your department, do you guys do like Monday night drills, or is there a specific date that you have all your members come and drill?
Yep, so every Monday night, so there's 3 Monday night drills, 1 Monday night's meeting night, and then if we have different things come up, like if we have a we have an opportunity available to us to go do something, we'll schedule another night, but we'll still do the Monday night. You know, everything else is an add-on from that. shouldn't really be a substitute for that Monday night.
And are you a proponent for if one of your members wants to go to outside training, take an outside class?
100%.
Is that allowed?
100%. I go to classes all the time. I'm going out to FDIC next week. We send guys from here. We send a whole group from our volunteer department every year to FDIC. Take classes, learn other ways of doing things. If you get pigeonholed into your only way of doing things, you're not going to improve on anything. So anytime somebody asks for a class, as long as it's realistic and in the realm of kind of our scope of work, sure. How can you say no? As long as the money's there to pay for it.
Fantastic. Personal question for you. What do you like to teach, or what's your go-to class? Are you an engine guy? Are you a truck guy? Are you a rescue guy?
So anywhere that has limited staffing, if they tell you they're an engine guy, a truck guy, bullshit. You have to do everything. if you pull up in my department where I work with 10 guys on the floor and you say, oh, I'm a truck guy, not touching that hose line, well, you're a fool. The fire's not going to go out. It's kind of like saying separate Gumby, right? Mm-hmm. Always flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like you have to be versed in everything. In regards to teaching stuff, honestly, I love teaching Fire One. I think Fire One is the one spot in the fire service where you can influence the most change. You're building the foundation of the house that their career is going to sit on. And if you build that foundation correctly, you teach them being aggressive is okay as long as you're safe about it. As safe as reasonably possible. If you want to be safe, you'll be an accountant.
Right.
But as long as you teach them the proper ways of doing it and not just what the textbook is showing them, because I don't know if you've seen the textbook material. It is garbage.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where they're putting out presentations from the textbook where they're showing a title says type 3 and it's a cape for vertical vent. That's what's going to teach our people? No. So like every program, I only put in for the classes, the subjects I enjoy. Okay. I'm not going to put in for a subject I don't enjoy.
Okay.
Because you're not going to get anything out of it. If I'm passionate about the topic, the students are going to get a 200% level class.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not passionate about it, I don't want to give them a 100% level class. I want to give them more than that. You know, and that's what they've come to expect from me in our program where we teach. I'm fortunate to teach with a lot of really good instructors. You know, we have guys from busy cities to small town departments. So we get such a good mix of people where you get all different tactics. So when you bring the ventilation program, they're getting flat roof ventilation in the city that they're doing all the time. And then you're getting the residential, the peaked roofs that we're doing in our area. You know, it's a very dynamic group for teaching, and just, I don't know. Fire One, I think everybody sleeps on Fire One because it's not the glory thing and you're not having the big online posts about teaching a Fire One class. But if you really want to make change in the fire service, that's where you start.
And I like how you mentioned it, because I'm assuming Fire One is like the intro for the candidate or the student into the fire service. So
right.
what better way to show them what it is from the beginning, like setting the tone. So I love the answer. I do. I love the answer. And I have to 100%, 110% agree with the textbooks, man, JPRs. I really wish there's a way. I think at some point enough people are gonna buck the system somehow, where we're going to be teaching the candidate or the student real world. Because I was talking to a buddy about this the other day. We will have a recruit class with recruits in it, and we'll teach them what they need to know to pass the test. But when they come out in the streets, it's like we have to reteach them, hey, what you learned in the book, yeah, that's not how we really do it out here. It's like we're a duplication, and we're just wasting time doing that.
Right. It's terrible. It's like some of these programs, you look at them, and you're like, why am I teaching this? It's like, I'd rather have a sister in a whorehouse than teach some of these presentations. They're terrible. Absolutely terrible. It's to the point where our instructors literally will develop their own presentations off the book presentation, and we won't even teach the book presentation. We're adding media to it. We're adding videos, audio. You know, the students get so much out of it. You can't expect somebody to sit in a room for 2 hours during a lecture with no pictures, no video, no substance, nothing realistic. You know, it's, and what, so you can just read slides to them? No, right. That sucks. I don't want to do that. So why are we going to make them do that?
Yeah, death by PowerPoint.
Oh, it's terrible.
Okay.
You could put people sleep on the PowerPoint too, but you could, where somebody's completely engaged the entire time. Mm-hmm. You're not reading it to them. That PowerPoint shouldn't be your script. The PowerPoint should be your key points you hit. There might be a bunch of stuff on the slide. You shouldn't be reading that whole slide. That information is there if somebody wants to take notes. That should prompt you to get into more depth on that particular topic. And some of these instructors, they'll just read and read and read. It's like, my God. Remember, it's like the old Ben Stein commercials. You remember those?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or dry.
Hey, his voice. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm up there in age too, so I know what you're talking about.
I was doing a fire one class last week. I made a Forrest Gump reference. They looked at me like I had four heads.
It is kind of crazy. Oh man, I'm trying to think what my captain. So our newest
I'm 37
firefighter,
and I feel old.
Dude,
I feel old around some of these guys.
Yeah. Because I'm 39, and I can't remember the reference. Crap. He mentioned something that we would all know, but our youngest fireman or our newest member on our crew, he's like 24, 25. My captain was like, "Hey, David, do you know this?" And he was like, "No." And we all just kind of looked at each other like, damn, we're getting old. Like, this shit's crazy.
Yep.
Oh, man. Okay. So let's talk about staffing. Pretty much with your volunteer department and even your career department, you guys will do what you have to do. You know, you're not able. I love how you mentioned calling mutual aid, call them in early. You can always turn them around. So in regards to staffing levels, which, you know, is a big deal nationwide in the fire service, especially with the volunteers, what's your staffing like?
Let's see. So with 10 on shift, where I work, we're a combination department. We have volunteers.
Okay.
Their numbers are down. We have a good core group of them. But it's not what it used to be. I mean, I could even look back 17 years ago when I got hired, like there were more, like mm-hmm. you'd have a lot of people showing up for these fires. Now we're getting a volunteer engine on the air and not always getting the second one, you know, and how many we get in the scene? Maybe four, maybe five volunteers show up, four or three of them may go in, you know, and we have some great ones, but it's just, you know, the economy doesn't help either.
Absolutely. You
know, they got to work the hours. It's not like the old days where you had a mill in town, everybody dumps out for the fire call. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like that. So it's, they do what they can with what they got. And I think a lot of it, the difference is, you know, how it's supported. You know, it's supported very well out here. It's one of those things where I think you get more of a buy-in from the volunteers and then all volunteer department, because they realize if I don't go, nobody helps.
Exactly.
And you have the career staff, and if I don't go, somebody's still going. You know, I think it's a different mindset, you know. But
okay. All right. I mean, and you know, with both departments, you guys are gonna do what you have to do regardless of
right.
of your numbers.
Right. And at the end of the day, you know, our management knows we need to increase our staffing. Our town, I think, is getting on board that we need to increase our staffing. There have been studies that have been done that tell them we have to increase our staffing. But it takes money. And absolutely. Money is always it's what makes the world go around, unfortunately. And you can't just print it unless you're in the federal government. So.
No, that's 100% accurate, man. Money makes the world go around. You got to have it for staffing. So I totally get it.
Yeah. And like, I mean, limited staff is our wheelhouse. Like it kills me sometimes. I see these guys teaching like programs on limited staffing, and it's because they took the fifth guy off their engine and now they're teaching limited staffing. No, motherfucker, come out here where you pull up and you have three dudes to get all these tasks done, and you're complaining about losing one guy. Like, come out this way. I'm sure it's the same where you are. Like, you have places, and that some what we show up with is a lot compared to other places.
Right. You yeah, know, there are some places where it's just one guy. Yeah. You're lucky if you get two guys in the truck.
Right. Right.
It's yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if you've heard the fatal fire in Western Pennsylvania not too long ago, where like four young children and the father died. And
Yeah, I saw that.
it's, you know, the I read the Fire Rescue One article this morning on that department, and you know, and the article is pretty much not throwing any blame on the department that responded, like the first due department,
I
but
think I saw that article.
it
Yeah.
was more on, this is the norm within the country that taxpayers don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Yes, I did see that article. Yeah.
it's scary, man. Like, you know, some departments are doing, like, I love these buffs that go around and they take pictures of departments everywhere they go. And then you'll see like a firehouse. You're like, is that really a firehouse? It looks like just a single piece shed. And the truck is an old Ford cab. You know what I mean? Like, it's
Yep.
2024. There are departments that are still operating like that. It's
Oh yeah.
amazing.
And then you'll see departments, their chief's rigs have gold leaf on them, but they're got they don't have a portable for a riding position.
Your back's on that too.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there's no lies being told,
Where's
man.
the priorities?
Some people don't want to hear it, but unfortunately, it's true. Your priorities, you got to make sure your
Right.
priorities lined up with the community, man. First and foremost.
Yeah, it's like as an officer, the guy they have to realize like it can, yes, the community's first, then it's your guys, then it's you. And a lot of these places, it's people have it the other way around, and mind-blowing sometimes.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It really is. It really is.
This whole mindset of we're first.
We're
Like I don't know,
first.
I don't know where this the switch was, but it used to be the citizen was first. That's why we said. I tell the students in the Fire One class, is anybody here against their will? Did anybody have a gun put to their head to say to go be a fireman? And nobody ever says yes. I go, so remember that. You signed up for this. You want safety, go find a safe job. This is not the job. You know, and it's, we did this weird switch. I don't know what the hell caused it. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, you started seeing it really start to pop up, and it's mind blowing. Like, we're here to do a job. I'm not telling you to go be stupid. But at the end of the day, it's not a safe job. No matter what you put on it, you could wrap yourself in fireproof bubble wrap, and it's still going to be a dangerous job. So, might as well just embrace it. Have a good time.
That's And but I truly believe it's shifting again. That paradigm is shifting
Yes, I
where
agree.
that we need to be safety, we're safe first culture is like different cadres and groups are taking it back. So I think we're definitely heading in the right direction. Which characteristic holds more weight in your opinion? Years of service, education, work ethic, or on the job experience?
Work ethic and experience, 100%.
And what, you know, why is that?
Because I guess you have somebody with good work ethic, you could teach them anything, you can get them to do anything, and they're going to give a shit. Somebody without work ethic, that's not something you teach somebody. Like I've said it before. Give me the blue collar guy that knows how to, what a hard day's work is, and we can make them a fireman. I hate to say it. Some of the medics you bring in, their hard day with the work was a couple stretchers here and there. You know, they never swung a hammer, they never slung steel. You know, they don't know a hard day's work, and that work ethic is completely different. Now, are there the anomalies? Sure. Yeah, people that were just medics, this and that, and they came in and they were just brought up different, which is awesome. But you get that good work ethic, they're going to crush this job. If you don't have that, then
It's
I
hard. No, it's hard, man.
right.
It's
Yeah.
hard
You
teaching.
know, it's.
It's hard teaching somebody who doesn't really give a shit to give a shit. Like,
Right.
it's
Right.
just, it's not gonna work
And we
unless.
run into it. Yeah.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
God. You'll see it. Like, people, they'll be like, oh, well, why didn't you teach me this? It's like, okay, well, I've literally watched you every shift sit in the recliner when. So is out at the truck every night till 10:30 going through stuff on his own. So if that person asks me, I am going to give them 110%. They're going to be the first priority. you have a responsibility to learn yourself, and then people will help you. It's not going to be holding your hand the entire route, you know. And some people think, "Oh, that's being an asshole." That's at the end of the day, like, you have to take some ownership over your own education. And then when somebody sees you taking that ownership, then they're going to give you everything they got. But if you're not going to help yourself, you can't expect somebody just to help you.
That's
And then with the when you're talking about time, you know, time versus experience, you know, you can have somebody with 2 years on the job, but they had a hell of a 2 years, bought a shit ton of work, went to a ton of classes, did the right things, had an awesome 2 years versus the 10-year roach that's been sitting around the firehouse doing nothing. I'm going to take the 2-year guy that's been crushing it, you know. So that's where I think work ethic and experience are the two most important, because at the end of the day, I don't give a shit about time. You could have had an awesome 2 years, or you could have had a terrible 10 years and did nothing. So that's where I think I lie on that.
No, you're good. You're good. I love it. I love it. The wellness and truly being there for one another. You mentioned it perfectly, how we can get consumed, man, by this job, especially if you want to be good at it, like from going to training to if you volunteer and if you hold a certain status at your volunteer department, not meaning like you have to be a chief or a captain, but if you're just involved with Monday night trainings, just hanging around the firehouse, meetings, county meetings, and all that other good stuff, like this job can consume you to the point where you could actually like lose sight of what's important. And I know it's happened to me, and it's happened to, I'm sure, a lot of firemen that actually want to be good. Like, I remember like being younger, man, I worked at one point, I was working three different fire departments, you know? So it can easily happen where you're just like, holy cow, like, where did the time go? But I know you had a little story that you wanted to share, so I'm going to let you have it.
I won't say a story, but it's more of the, you know, it's, people got to realize that it's okay to not be okay. There's more of you out there than you think. In this line of work, depending on how long you do, it could take one call, or it could be 25 years of calls that you just stored away and stored away and thought nothing of. And you made the jokes at the firehouse afterwards and everything was fine. And then you hit that one call where it's like opening that floodgate and your life just gets turned upside down. I went through it, you know, and I was in a real rough spot. I don't really talk about this much, so bear with me. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where, like, it takes a support network. And that support network isn't the peer support groups out there. It's the people that you are close to. It's those good friends, right? It's that good friend that says, "Hey, dude, something is not right with you. You need to get some help," or "What's going on?" Even that simple conversation. A lot of these department, not department, but like town issued programs, EPA, all that kind of stuff, like, or EAP, whatever the hell it is, it doesn't work all the time. You know, I remember years ago, we had a bad wreck in Brantford, and I was still a volunteer there before I got hired. And kid burned up in the car, and out on the highway, and they had EAP come in. They bring us all into the room, and they're like, "Oh, tell us about the call, this and that." And the person that's supposed to be helping starts bawling our eyes out. Like, these programs don't work.
Right.
You got to find somebody that works for you, you know. And my captain and my buddy that we hired together, you know, he hooked me up with somebody that, she's got a very good couch, I'll say that. You know, it listens to you, lets you talk, mm-hmm. just lets you get it off your chest. And sometimes it's all you need. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, everything sacrifices. You know, I'm married, I have two kids. You know, my problem was before I had the kids. You know, so it was a little bit easier to address, you know. But it puts you in a dark spot. You got to be able to identify it and realize it's okay. You're not the only person going through stuff like this. And hopefully you don't burn as many bridges, you know, when stuff goes south, and hopefully your friends are understanding and know you had a problem. And you can't help it. And in this line of work, you don't pick and choose what you go to. You pull up to something that thinks you think it's just a plain normal call, and pure chaos, you know.
Absolutely.
And sometimes those calls don't end. You'll see them on the news. You'll see them on Congress things. You know, it's one of those things. It sucks. keeps popping up, and you got to keep managing it. Like once you have the issue, it's it doesn't truly go away. You kind of just got to stay on it.
No, you're 100% right. Hit it on the nail, man. hit the nail on the head.
Hopefully, one of these days they let you do ayahuasca up here, because that seems to be working for everybody in the military.
But okay,
a lot of these guys are going down to Mexico, like a bunch of Navy SEALs, Marines, Army. There's all programs that are paid for that you go down and you go sit with a shaman, and they literally take you on these experiences with these psychedelics, and these guys are coming back completely changed men. But you listen to other podcasts, I assume, right?
Yeah.
You listen to Sean Ryan at all?
No, but I think I know his name popped up because I think John Spear with Fit to Fight mentioned that he listens to that podcast.
Yeah, so he went down and did this and stopped drinking. Great with the family. It was like a light bulb came on with him. The guy, DJ Shipley, the Navy SEAL, he was on his podcast. He talks about it. He does a lot of training. He owns GBRS Group. He does a lot of Bray County with their SWAT team. He went down, turned his life around. Like, this works. And it's probably not available up here because pharmaceutical and everything
pharmaceuticals,
else.
Pharmaceuticals, every little mumbo jumbo
right.
thing.
Once you attach money to it, then somebody's got to grease their pocket. It's truly one of those things that is working for people. And it's too bad it's not prevalent up here. You know, you got to go out of the country to go do this. But it'd be nice. You know, it's one of those things that works, and it seems like it keeps it in check for people. But who knows? Maybe one day it'll be up here.
Maybe one day. You're right. Well, you know, as we stated earlier, man, money. It's all about the money. Somebody's got to have it. So,
yep.
Definitely. And no, you're right. We all go through it. We all should have a support network. And I think that the fire service is doing a lot better. I 100% agree with you that whatever your city or town EAP support, and it's hard for me to explain something to someone that sits behind a desk all day. You know what I mean? So I know they have programs like Next Rung with Blake Stinnett, and a bunch of other groups. And a bunch of, like, there's a bunch of mental health podcasts out there too with people that either are still in the fire service or retired, either fire, EMS, or police, that understands what we go through. So that's what I tell, like, a lot of these young people coming in, is find somebody that's in your line of work that you can talk to, because it helps when someone can go, hey, a couple of years ago, I ran like close to the same call. This is what I did. So I totally understand. Totally get it. Before we part out, this was another thing. I know it's one of those things. It's good for other people to know, because we can only control what we can control. So, I'll kind of let you have it again with how you want to explain it and talk about it.
Yeah, so I don't really talk about this much. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but it's I was born with half a hand on my right hand. You know, it's one of those things where when you're born a certain way, you don't know any other way of doing things. I wouldn't really call it a disability. It's the best, like we talk. That was the term I threw out there. Like that's what people refer to it as, but it's only one if you make it one, I guess. So the reason why I'm on this here, so is a lot of my Fire One classes, I know, so the last couple of years, there's been kids coming through with similar issues. Don't let somebody tell you you can't do the job. Doesn't have, but something like that, you know. I've worked with people with autism who are tremendous on the fire ground. There's all different levels, right? Some people wear their scars on the outside, some on the inside. Like, you never know what somebody's battling, you know. Scar on the inside can be PTSD, somebody's battling, or it could be half a hand. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, people need to realize that, let somebody show you that they can do the job first. Don't just write them off. There's plenty of people out there that do have worse situations, that do far more. Was it the Army Ranger? Was he the Green Beret? Got both of his legs blown off.
Right.
Returned to combat. Like, it's unreal. Like, somebody with the ambition and the heart. You know, like Bob Gallione said, this job takes two things, heart and balls. You know, you put somebody there, they're not going to let anything hold them back. You know, it's, kids need to know that there's ways of doing things. Find a way that works for you. There's customizable stuff. Like, I've had custom gloves made for one hand. You know, I took a little bit of an argument with my fire chief many, many years ago. because I wasn't wearing gloves, starting saws out back behind the firehouse, you know, and there were some words exchanged, but there was a reason, because wearing a glove that doesn't truly fit running a chainsaw isn't really the best combination, you know. So now my department purchased custom gloves for me. So now it's one of those things where it makes it a little easier. I just did the job with whatever they issued. But if somebody's willing to help you or give you something that helps, take the help. Like, you're all being humble to just kind of make yourself work harder.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Yeah.
It's okay to take the help if it's asked for. I was always one that didn't, you know, and it's okay. It makes life easier. Nobody's going to judge you for making your life a little easier.
Sometimes. Oh, hell no. No.
Don't be 10 ply soft, but it's you can still get it done.
Okay. All right. I love it. I love the message. Yeah, truly do. Because like you said, we're all dealt a certain hand at life that we don't get to choose. So
right.
You can either let it defy you, or you could embrace it and face it head on. And that's exactly what you
right.
did. Because to me, that's cool that you can get custom gloves made. You know that
yeah,
there
I didn't
is
know
a,
it either. I didn't know it either. You know,
so that's awesome. But I mean, it took a little bit of sparring, a little bit of jabs
oh,
here
yeah.
and there with the chief to get it done. Yeah. But you got it done.
Oh, especially when he misheard what you actually said. Yeah. It took some explaining on that.
All right.
You know, at the end of the day, once he realized it was all right, get him what he needs. You know, which is it's all you can ask for. You know,
no, absolutely.
You know, and this is the same guy. Like, I had occupational health tell the department not to hire me when I put for the job because of my hand.
Wow.
And he told them, absolutely not. I've seen him work. This is who I want. So, you know, as one of those, as much as him and I could butt heads sometimes, I'm a loyal person sometimes to a fault. And I could be frustrated with someone, but at the end of the day, if somebody took care of you like that and gave you the career, you know, somebody could have just said no. Okay, occupational health said no, sorry, next candidate, you know.
Right
It's one of those things where it's hard to turn your back on that,
right?
But, yeah.
Okay. No, man, this was great. I truly love talking, learning about your department, learning about you, man. You dropped a good amount of gems for people out there, and you know, you seem to have it. I don't want to say you seem to have it figured out, but you know
no.
what our purpose is here. Like
yeah.
the mission, you're mission focused, mission driven. You know that the community comes first, you know, before us. But also, we need to also remember, you know, we do have families, we have lives. It's okay to go out there and talk to other people who may be struggling or whatnot. So I just have to say thank you, man, for coming on and accepting the
well,
invite.
Find a hobby. Like, don't let the fire service be your everything.
Damn right. Yes, sir.
You need an escape, you know, whether it could be just hanging out with the kids or fishing, oh, whatever you want to do, you know, find something outside of the fire service. Otherwise, it's going to eat you up. You need that break. You know, you need the break. It's not healthy for you. It's not healthy for your family.
Definitely. So, definitely.
Find the escape.
Like I said, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the message.
Well, I appreciate the contact.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You have a good day.
You too. Take care.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.